The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
Traffic dominating an awful lot of your views out there this morning. A caller says, I've been driving for 40 years, many of them as a HGV driver. I've never driven in a worse town than Letterkenny. Terrible traffic management and planning for years. Only answer is the bridge over the Swilly and bypass the town. Everything going north, Donegal in the west, could be catered for. They've been talking for 30 years about this. Promises will be flying now with the election coming up and more BS. Is this another issue? Maybe the public has a role to play in this. I know there are campaigns and fair play to them, and that's what's needed if that's what people feel is needed. But could people be doing more? I wonder. What's wrong with putting a guard down there with a white glove directing traffic? Surely that would be an answer to the backlog of traffic. They had a guard direct traffic years ago. Same thing should be done now. I'm not really quite sure how that might work with so many entries and exits. I think you would need a number of guards. But the Gardaí aren't responsible for traffic management. They're pretty busy doing everything else. And there is the TII, there's roads authorities, there's all different manner of organisations that have a responsibility, while the guards have other things to be at as well. I left Lurgy Brack at 10 to 10. I'm still not even at the Toyota garage. There's a backlog right up to the top of Lurgy Brack. And at the very least, what today's instance exposes, if in fact there was some sort of a collision, that Letterkenny, you can drive it to grind it to a halt with one little instant. It's crazy. We've seen that in the past with collisions on the old four lanes, but things haven't improved. You see one small bumper to bumper on the Polestar roundabout at 8:45, and people are still queued up at Lurgy Brack 2.5 hours later. All right, Mary's with us now. Hi, Mary. We were talking before 11 there just about a judge seemingly getting tough on people who don't turn up to court to answer charges of parking in disabled bays or accessible bays or however they might like to be described. But it's not just those bays, is it? The parents' bays are also often taken up.
Hey, good morning, Greg. I've seen it before, but maybe more so in the last number of weeks, because it's just I would go to the shop there, I would have one of my grandchildren on while going to pick the other one up, and you just can't get in to one of the spaces. And there was a gentleman sitting in a car one day, and I said to him, "This is I said, I don't see you with a child on," and he just looked at me. Another lady was parked one other day, and when I went into the shop and come back out again, she came out and her car was just full of stuff. And I said to her, I went down and I actually said to her, I said, "You don't look as if you have a child on there." She just looked at me and reversed out and drove off. There is only a few of them at the supermarkets here down here in any show, and anyway, it's not. And then I just don't get it, that they can't walk a few feet to the shop, because I have my sister now at the minute on crutches, and I do pull into them to let her out to go to do her shopping or to the post office, but I hate pulling into them to start off with, because I think, well, I'm okay. But it's just a young fella too. One other day he popped in, and I said to him, I said, "You don't look as if there's anything wrong with you. I'm just going in for something to eat." Mm. I'm going, "Well, why are you parked there? You're well able to walk."
There were other parking spaces further from the door, Mary. Not that that's any excuse. But it was just... In other words, they just parked there for handiness.
Yeah, it's just a matter of, well, to me, I think it's a bit of laziness,
There's no other excuse. If you're able-bodied, you don't have a child with you, and you use them, it's only laziness. There's no other motivation, is it?
Even when I go to do my own shopping, it's very seldom I would park close to the door anyway, because I think, well, maybe somebody else is not so able-bodied as me, so I'll park farther away and let them spaces closer to the door for somebody else.
It's no coincidence they're closer to the door, because it's awkward. We have to nowadays. Someone might not be able to get a childminder. There could be a single parent or whatever it might be, or there could be a couple. It doesn't matter. But the reason they're there is because it's tough to go shopping with a child, and sometimes you don't have a choice. And they're there for that reason. Do you know what I mean? To get better access, safer access, yeah, and what have you. You know, I mean, they're not there for the good of the health. I don't know. I wouldn't have the guts to park in one. And it's not necessarily because I'm an angel or a saint, don't get me wrong, Mary, but I wouldn't have the neck to pull into one of those spaces and walk off. I'd be too afraid of someone like you coming up to me, if you know what I mean. I don't understand how people have the neck to do it, right?
Exactly. I just don't get it. Like, I'm thinking, like, you know, if you just take a look around, there is only a few at each of the places. I think there's only two child ones at one of the supermarkets, and I think there's either two or four at the other one. But you just see them coming and pulling in, like, you know, and, you know, I just think, like, why could you not leave that for a family, like, I mean, or somebody that's coming? Because I know for me, I think a lot of my car, as some of the rest of my family do, and, I mean, you're in a tight spot and you're trying to get a door open. You don't want to hit the other person's car, and you're trying to get a child out, you're trying to get a disabled person out. Just doesn't make sense. But as I say, some people just don't think, they don't want to know either or, so.
It's frustrating, though, but fair play. Yeah. We need to get you a cap or something, Mary. You're going around in the show and walking up to people. But listen, you know, sometimes you have to call it. And you've, no one's gone, oh, I'm sorry, sorry. They've always got an excuse or a look.
No, because there was a couple of people coming out of this. There was a person sitting in the car, one of the cars, to park up there and walk into the shop, like, because there is a few people that I do know, like, comes in and does need the spaces, like.
Yeah.
But I just hate pulling into them now myself, because my sister's on crutches at the minute, like, you know. But most times I will, like, I mean, I've only parked in them a couple of times because she's just gone into the post office, but she is on the crutches and I do need the space for her to get out.
But it's not for you, though. Some would say, though, Mary, I'm going to have to say, because others are going to text in, that if you don't have a badge or you don't have a child with you, you shouldn't be parking in those spaces yourself.
Yeah, exactly, Greg. Exactly, But one day I did, like, you know, because it was really heavy.
Can you hear this?
Like,
Mary, listen to this.
Yeah.
That's me knocking on the driver window saying, Mary, come on now.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, exactly, Greg. I totally agree 100%. Yeah. Yes, I shouldn't have done. But because she was on the crutches, I took her out. But I just dropped her out.
I wouldn't have minded. All right, Mary, but I take your point. Listen, fair play to you. Thank you so much for joining us. And it's just a wee bit of consideration, Mary, we're asking for, isn't it? No one wants to see people put off the road, I don't think.
No, I wouldn't go that far now, but I would stick a fine on them, all right. Like, you know, I think we should give a donation to charity or something. So,
yeah, or education courses, someone else suggested.
Sorry?
Education courses. You know, maybe have a venue whereby a couple of people with a disability or that need those spaces could sit in front of drivers that have been found parked in them and just explain how it affects them in their lives or how it inconveniences them. Maybe we could educate people that way.
Do you know what, Greg, if people have to be educated for that, that's out driving on the road, there's something seriously wrong.
I hear you. Okay.
Because all they need is a brain to use that you don't park there. You're well able to walk. Like.
Okay, Mary, listen, thanks for your time. Have a lovely day. Best wishes to you and all. I work in a shopping area and I use the mother and baby spaces because of the tightness of parking spaces. And I don't care who it annoys. My car's been damaged a number of times. That's someone. And, you know, fair play for texting in, saying, you know, stuff it, I'm going to use them. Good to hear the judges cracking down on these inconsiderate people and also showing no respect to the court. Also, those poor parking in mother and baby spaces and not a baby in sight. And the parents in spaces. Some of us dads do shopping as well. But listen, I take your point. Okay, we're going to be talking about some startling figures as it relates to contacts made to Men's Aid over the course of the last year. Now, Men's Aid is Ireland's only dedicated organisation supporting men and their families experiencing domestic violence. Minister for Justice Helen McEntee last week launched Men's Aid's 2022 annual report to mark International Men's Day. And I hope Katrina Bentley, CEO of Men's Aid.
Good morning. Thanks very much. Thank you.
Right, now, as I said in the preamble, and I've been waffling a little since just till we got the connection with you, almost 10,000 contacts made to the service in 2022. And I'm not going to lie to you, I wasn't really overly familiar with, or perhaps as familiar as I should be, with Men's Aid, Katrina. Mm-hmm. So I just wonder if that figure might be greater if there was even more awareness.
Absolutely. Well, our research shows one in four women and one in seven men would experience some level of domestic violence or domestic abuse during their lifetime. So it is a national issue. And I suppose our report shows that the increase in the men coming forward is very welcomed because they're starting to talk.
And what are they coming forward and stating as the issues?
The two key areas was emotional abuse and psychological abuse, coercively controlling behaviours, then physical abuse, economic abuse and sexual abuse. So in particular, the emotional, psychological, and what I mean by that would be, walking on eggshells at home, living in a state of fear, intimidating behaviours, humiliation, issues around access with the kids, and disclosures of substance abuse, etc.
And is there any other trends that you can sort of pick out from these figures in that, I presume, are they that most of the issues they are saying are perpetrated by women?
Mm-hmm. 91% of the callers, of the 9,500 callers, were disclosing a female abuser. After that, then, would be same-sex, so members of the LGBT communities, and then family violence. So that can be bi-directional, or it can be an adult child within the family unit.
And in terms of what support you can offer, obviously mm-hmm. there's a listening ear, maybe some signposting, mm-hmm. but beyond that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the helpline is first and foremost. And for many men, it can take a couple of rings and attempts to ring. And we can see on the software that men ring and hang up and ring and hang up. And then eventually they have the courage to come forward. Just to mention, the men are each in between 18 and early 90s. So it's the younger male adult, 18 to 23, maybe in college, university, first time girlfriend, etc. The main cohort is between 40 and 55, married, kids, perhaps waiting till the kids go into college before they move out or move on, etc. And then the older cohort of the 65 plus, who has been living with domestic abuse for decades and decades. So first and foremost is the helpline and being validated and for someone to listen and hear their story and what's happened to them, and then to empower them to make their own decisions as to what's the best next step for them. It might necessarily be a family law route. It might actually be keeping them safe, safety plans. We have counselling and psychotherapy work and peer group and court support and outreach as well for appointments.
Yeah, I think there's something particularly heartbreaking about someone needing help getting as far as dialing the number, the couple of rings and hanging up, because then there's so many others that actually don't even get that far.
Mm. But given the prevalence, we know the 9,500 is actually only the tip of the iceberg. Yeah. So I suppose this weekend, being International Men's Day yesterday, we're very much trying to highlight about having the confidence and feeling encouraged to pick up the phone to talk to us or to talk to a friend or family member to confide and trust somebody that you trust.
And I often, when we talk about domestic violence or whatever it might be towards women, people will often say, yeah, but what about men? And I don't see any great advantage in pitching one against the other. These are people Absolutely. Out there that are enduring this. But is Absolutely. It the case, though, that we have made good progress in terms of Garda training or whatever it might be, that women feel more comfortable, not all the way there, but more comfortable mm-hmm. in coming forward? But there still mm-hmm. is that stigma, maybe that sense that they won't be believed, or maybe that mm-hmm. they won't be sided with, that might stop men coming forward.
Absolutely. the stigma, the shame, the silence, the stereotypes over the decades and decades. So I think what's important and that we see on our helpline are many mums and sisters who ring because they're worried about their son or their brother. So us as a female, us women have a, we have a role to play in that as well. Our service is victim centric. So we support women, men, any person who rings or is in need of an appointment. So we just really encourage anyone to come forward. Yeah.
Do you have any particular advice? And I mean, I know you're CEO of Men's Aid, and I'm not sure if you're on the phones, but you have a team that's on the phone. So rather than getting into specifics, but, you know, parental alienation or withholding mm-hmm. access to children or that being mm-hmm. used and abused, does that make mm-hmm. up many of the calls? I know you did reference this a little earlier on, but like mm-hmm. what can be done in relation to that? Because it comes up time and time again, and it still feels yeah. like the system is not designed to recognise or address that.
I think it's improving, whereby the children are being used as access, you know, weapons. And we hate the term parental alienation, whatever. It's toxic, the toxic term.
It's not a term I'm terribly fond of myself.
Yeah, it's not going to help anyone, you know. But using the children to get back at another parent, you know, targeting opposite your partner, is impacting the children. And sometimes parents forget that the children are experiencing domestic abuse. They're not witnessing it. Yeah. And they're very clever and they pick up on these things. So number one is to try and speak with your partner and your other half and for parents to be reasonable. It's not the children's fault that the relationship is broken up, you know, relations break down. To try and put the kids first and foremost. And then if you are going a legal route and access orders are being breached, to follow through with the breaches of the access orders to go back into court, unfortunately.
In terms of men that need to get out of the home, we know there's a struggle too in women domestic violence services in availability of property, but there are mm-hmm. systems there to try and accommodate people. Do we have any men's shelters in Ireland or on the island of Ireland?
We don't have enough refuge for women, and we don't have any refuges for men as yet. There is a pilot programme with two housing bodies, one on the east coast and one in towards the Midlands, that two slot are working with ourselves and another agency to start kind of piloting, for want of a better word. There isn't as many men coming form with children because the children are predominantly with mum, so there hasn't been a huge need for accommodation as yet, but there has been some bespoke, there has been some issues, Greg, and where the men have been in touch with us, we've been in touch with our partners and we've helped them get to safety.
Well, what do you say to someone who feels they are being emotionally abused, you know, psychologically abused, or if mm-hmm. the children are being weaponized or however? Because mm-hmm. I think for some men and whatever, I'm sure women feel this too when it's in their direction, they can't necessarily identify it as abuse, or right. they just see it as it's just the relationship, or is it just, you know what I mean? Like, so yeah. is it uh-huh. the case to ring up and have that conversation and say, right, is this situation I'm in a form of abuse?
That's correct. A lot of the calls are those calls. So men don't recognize that the abuse can happen to them because there is assumptions made that domestic abuse is a male on a female. So for the men's experience, if they're in the fog of it, a lot of the calls would be men questioning, is this domestic abuse? Mm. Because a lot of men do not want to be labelled as victims of domestic abuse because it's not comfortable with them. So we recognise it's very sensitive, it's a very complex issue, it's a very personal issue as well. But those calls are very welcome. Very welcome.
And in terms of answering those calls, as we mentioned right at the beginning, Men's Aid is Ireland's only dedicated organisation supporting men and their families. Are you able to answer all of the calls?
No, of the 9,500 we missed 1,300 calls last year.
And is that a resources issue, Katerina?
Yeah. Right. Funding and resources. No person there at the time.
Does it help that you have the Minister for Justice, Helen McEntee, launching this in that, you know, it's a perfect opportunity to say, well, thank you, Minister, but by the way...
Yes, yes. And she was there on Friday, and the week ahead, we have to submit our funding for 2024. So our application comes at the right time, for want of a better word.
Right, okay.
And she certainly reiterated her support for all victims, and in our case, the male victim.
Katerina, thanks for working with me through the technical issues. I do appreciate it. It's just sometimes you get days like that. All right. Thank you very much indeed.
Thanks,
that is Katerina Bentley, CEO of Men's Aid Ireland. 9,524 contacts made to the service in 2022. It's a big increase on 21%, up by a quarter. One in four calls were first-time callers. Unfortunately, 1,300 calls went unanswered. The experiences shared by men include emotional, psychological, physical, financial and sexual abuse, with high levels of coercively controlling relationships disclosed. The gender of the abused are 91% female, 7% male, 2% both. Okay, there you go. Now, what will happen is, over the course of the next weeks or months, and I get it, by the way, is people will say, well, you never talk about domestic violence against men. Well, we do, and we just have. Right, okay, 086 60 25,000. If you want to comment on that last conversation as well, and it's not easy, you know, because as I say, people don't want to admit that they're in that type of a situation, or they might feel that they're weak or whatever. They shouldn't. I'm just saying that might be common reasons for people not to say, right, you know what, enough is enough, or I can do better than this, or I need to get out of this situation. But if you want to share any views on that, please get in touch with us, 086 60 25,000. That's the WhatsApp and text number, or give us a call on 074 91 25,000. Now, there's a special In Conversation event at the Everglades Hotel, Derry, next Thursday, November 30th at 7:30 p.m. It's in aid of the Lorna Byrne Children's Foundation, supported by a partnership with Africa. And taking part will be Lorna Byrne, who is author of Angels in My Hair. Lorna, good morning to you.
Good morning. My pleasure to be talking with you.
And it's been set up for me to ask, or this has been entitled, a conversation about if you believe in angels. Now, clearly you do. But what are angels, if you know what I'm on about? Because I think we all have our own view of it. So when we talk about angels existing, what are we talking about?
Angels are, what would I say, they're a light. And I always remember asking God, you know, what is the difference between a human being and an angel? And I was just told that God created angels long, long ago, and that they are light and that they are creatures. And I know that's a strange kind of word to be used, but they are light. And I see the guardian angel with everyone. And I see, the thing is, I see the angel physically with everyone, as if I was there in the studio with you, you would see me physically.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just very, very beautiful. Everything about them is kind and gentle. And they're in so many different faiths right across the world as well. Sometimes they're called by different names. But your guardian angel is one that is with you every second of your life and never leaves you, and just loves you unconditionally, no matter what you may think about yourself. To your guardian angel, you are its number one. And you know, your guardian angel is a gift from God, so why should you ignore it?
Are you of the view that every person is assigned a guardian angel on birth? Because some people might wish that their angel is, you know, their mother or their father or their son or their daughter. You know what I mean? But is that the case or not the case?
No, your mom or your grandmother or your uncle or that can never be your guardian angel. And the angels love when we say, you know, our loved one is an angel in heaven. They love that, because it's such an expression of love, and it is in the sense of how we think of angels, you know, as something, you know, kind and good. But you and I and everyone out there is more than any angel ever could be, because we all have a soul, that spark of light of God. So I'm afraid the angels, I love this, but I'm afraid the angels have us on a higher pedestal than we actually have the angels.
So what is their function then?
And their function is, you know, to, how would I say it? Your guardian angel is the gatekeeper of your soul, you know, and its function mainly is to help to guide you through your life, to keep you as, what would you say, on the right path as much as possible. But I suppose the human part of us, in a sense, doesn't always believe we have a guardian angel, and we don't always, you know, listen to that inner voice or whatever way your guardian angel communicates with you. So a lot of the time we ignore that guidance, but a lot of the time as well, we do hear it and we go by it, and we don't realize that we have been even given that guidance ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And again, so, it's...
But some might say, well, then, is it really just an extension of our consciousness and not necessarily a blessing from God?
No, I would have to say it's not an extension of your consciousness. I'm severely dyslexic, so I can't read, you know, so I haven't been educated in the same way as yourself.
Wow.
Sometimes I even say things backwards, and I have all kinds of codes to help me find my way through the world here. And by right, you know, I always remember when Angels in My Hair was published, a lot of college students and that, and still today, the same thing happens. You know, they say, Lorna, if you could do it, then we can. You know, and I think it's about as well giving hope to people. You know, and the world today needs hope.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to have more compassion and love in our lives. It's not your conscious mind, it's beyond that. I see the angels physically. And to me, I can't understand why you can't.
What's their physical representation?
That part is hard to describe. I know I describe them as a light, but within that light, they give a human appearance. And sometimes it can be male or it can be female, and sometimes it's neither. But the one thing I love about angels, and that is, you know, the way we have a human body, and we dress ourselves with clothes. The clothing that an angel wears is part of the angel in the sense, like the body in that way. So they don't have to, which I think would be great if we could do the same thing, you know, they don't have to take on and off clothing. And an angel has such depth as well. You know, they're just such a brilliant light, and I just see them in the world today, you know, helping so many people and helping us all to see, you know, that light of hope, because so many people all around the world are feeling lost, you know, in that way.
And some might feel, and particularly I think with children, forsaken in some way or other. Is that, what would you say to someone who's that emotion?
What do you mean?
How can my guardian angel, or so many guardian angels, allow such terrible things to happen, for an example? And I'm not questioning, yeah. I'm just asking the question as to people might go, well, yeah. you get me?
I do, and I understand. And I often would give out to God about that. Why are so many horrific things happening in the world and children being hurt? But it's not God or the angels doing it. I'm afraid it's us human beings doing it. And that's the only way I can answer.
Well, we were given will, and I suppose it's what we choose to do with our will. And unfortunately, some people do it poorly. Do you communicate with people's angels, or can you communicate with them or relate information? Or what can you do if someone's sitting in front of you as it relates to their guardian angel?
What would I say? Well, sometimes when I'm giving a talk and we have questions and answers, and, you know, someone, you know, puts their hand up and they ask a question, if I'm given the answer for them, I'll give it to them. But I would always say I'm not a fortune teller. You know, it's no point asking me.
No, you're not trying to frame it in that way. Yeah. Yeah. Can you see my guardian angel through this call?
No, I can't. And I would love to, but I can't. I would have to be in the same room as
you. Okay. That's it was not to challenge your... Yes, it wasn't a question or challenge. It was just to sort of see if it works like that. Recently,
it'd be great if it did.
Yes, of course. Recently in my photos, I've seen an orb. The orb is orange in colour. My friends tell me that orbs are a sign of an angel. Can you ask Lorna to tell me more about that and if different coloured orbs mean anything?
I love that because science already has picked up orbs, you know, in the air and everything like that. If it wasn't your camera or your phone, then it could be a sign from your guardian angel to help you. But you'd have to be sure whether it was your camera or your phone, wherever the photograph is coming from. Mm-hmm. And an angel can use an orb as a sign for you as well.
A caller asks, are numbers, angel numbers of any significance?
I hear a lot about that. And I always notice that sometimes a person gets so fixated, if I'm saying that word properly,
you are, yeah,
on numbers. And what I would say to that person, if it is a number that is a sign for you, don't get fixated on it as such. Don't keep going looking for it, because more than likely you're making a mistake. It'll just pop up when it's needed.
Mm-hmm. A caller says, I sometimes feel like someone's laying in bed beside me. I feel like there is a presence. It's not one I fear. Could that be your angel?
Well, that could be her guardian angel or the soul of a loved one, you know, giving her comfort in the sense of, you know, reassurance. But it may not actually be the angel or the soul actually lying in the bed beside her, but she just feels the presence.
So I'm going to use just the words that are associated with these things because it's the easiest way to describe it. Like, are ghosts a different thing to angels? Do you believe in ghosts? Spirits, spirit world. You know what I mean? I was just trying to use the right word, but to get the point across.
An angel isn't a ghost for a start. Let's just clear that. But, you know, sometimes we use the word a ghost, or sometimes we use the word spirit. And sometimes it is a soul that is just, you know, visiting or passing by, or somebody sees the soul of someone, you know, that died a while ago and they're going to visit someone. And sometimes that's allowed to happen, or sometimes it can even be seen in a photograph, you know, someone looking at a photograph and it suddenly changes and just for a brief second in that way. And sometimes, you know, I met a lady recently and I just smiled at her and she just said, you know, when she was out on the crowded street, she had lost her beautiful daughter, and a young woman was walking up towards her in her direction. And for just a split second, she thought she was seeing her daughter. And I said to her, that more than likely was the soul of your daughter. You know, how can I say it? Stepping into the human being for a brief second on the face, and you saw your daughter for a brief second.
Yeah. Now, then you would believe in signs, be it a robin, a feather. I even spoke to someone who was at a funeral and a crisp packet threw across the grave that was the person's favourite crisps. And in that moment, they believed that that was a sign. So, and that's just one particular example that was related to me. Yeah. So if people believe that there's something in their mind saying that means something and it connects me to that other person, well, then surely you would suggest they have to trust that, because if that's what it feels, then that's probably what it is.
Yeah, I would say most of the time, trust that completely. Like, you know, God and the angels give us many, many signs. And you know how hard it is, you know, even to prove that God exists. You know, even science is having a row over that, you know, the spiritual side of us. And it's in a sense based on faith, you know, where a student or a person has faith that they can run the marathon and they do it, you know. So I think it's, again, that word you use, trust, to have trust, because it gives you courage and strength as well.
Callers are asking how you can better tap into your guardian angel, or how you can tap into your guardian angel.
To me, it's very simple, and people are asking that all over the world. So just lately, I'm saying to them, you know, when you wake up in the morning, just say good morning to your guardian angel, and just, you know, ask your guardian angel to help you through the day. And maybe when the end of the day comes, you can sit down and think about your day and see where you may believe that your guardian angel gave you a helping hand, or you may at some stage say, well, my guardian angel didn't seem to help me today, and that's okay.
Numbers again, I keep seeing the numbers 888. Is that anything to do with angels? I know you kind of were a bit reluctant when I asked a number-related question earlier.
Because
it depends on your time zones, and there's so many variables that are probably that are outside the relationship that you're talking of, that I find it hard that it could be part of the influence. But anyway, that's just my observation.
Yeah, an awful lot of people are into numbers as such, but as you said, numbers relate to so many different things. And that's why I just say to people, you know, don't focus on numbers as such in such a way that it's ruling your life.
Well, you also would imagine, you would imagine that obviously some people can't use numbers through dyslexia or whatever it might be. You would also thought that if what we are talking of is true, then that they would have been able to overcome that, that people would not be excluded because of a difficult. Also, some people never are educated as to numbers. Most people in this world don't even have access to the internet. Another caller,
right.
Yeah, my mom passed away in January. I miss her terribly. Her name was Rosaline. I've been seeing the letter R everywhere I go. Even in the supermarkets, I see the letter R in all the products. Is this a sign from her, or am I crazy? Well, you're not crazy. It could be a frequency illusion, which is something similar to that. You never see a Renault Clio until you buy a Renault Clio, and then you realize that every second car on the road's a Renault Clio. So at the very least, it could be a frequency illusion. So you're not going mad, please, listener. But do you believe there's a significance beyond what I've just outlined, Lorna?
No, I think what you've outlined is very clear and very beautiful as well. And her mother has, you know, just passed away. It's not long. And her name was Rosaline. So the letter Rose, you know, is forefront in her mind. So sometimes maybe it is a sign, but maybe as well, you know, it's just coming forward all of the time. She's seeing it everywhere, just as you said, the Renault. But if it's giving her comfort, I would say to her, if, say, in a year's time or something, you know, when she has got through a little bit more of the grief, because she's really missing her mom really hard. So that means she has a coldness in her chest, and grief is different for everyone. So it could take her a long time.
Yeah, it is a very difficult experience to lose someone, and you have to allow yourself the space, don't you, to see the wood from the trees as well, because that could become obsessive and actually just feed into the grief. It's not to disprove it, but you would just have to be careful, wouldn't you, Lorna, that this doesn't get sort of attached to your grief in a way?
Yeah, and I would say that it's just like the numbers, don't get fixated on it, you know, in that way. The best thing I would say for that might help her with her grief is write a letter to her mom, you know, physically write it and read it out loud to herself what she has written, you know, and cry and talk about your mom. You know, your mom loved you. You know, and I know her mom, Rosaline, I love the name. I haven't heard it in years. My best friend as a child was called Rosaline. So it's beautiful to hear. But to know that the soul of her mom is in and around her at different times, helping her through this grief. But the grief never really heals. We just learn how to live with it. You will always miss your mom. But I know she's in heaven. And I know she's happy, and I know she's young again.
Lastly, I have polycystic ovary syndrome. I've struggled to conceive for years. I've been having recurring dreams of my grandmother holding a beautiful baby girl with curly blonde hair and blue eyes. I feel so drawn to this baby as if it is mine. Is my grandmother sending me a message? Is she helping me get pregnant?
Well, I love that, you know, and I know this woman is trying to become pregnant, and I know it's very hard to become pregnant with, I can't pronounce
the condition
word.
We talked of.
Yeah,
yes.
The condition as such, you know. But remember, there's loads of children out in the world, I'm being told to say to her, that want a mom and they don't have a mom, and they want the love of a mom. So don't pass not being a mother by just wanting to carry your own child. And I know that can hurt some people, because they only want to carry their own child, because I've met many women who just focused on wanting to become pregnant and never did. God didn't send them a little soul. And then it was too late for them to become a mom, to adopt a child or foster a child. You know, there's so many children out there in the world that need a mom and a dad, just need that love.
You can hear more from Lorna Byrne at a special conversation event at the Everglades Hotel Derry. It's next Thursday, November 30th at 7:30 p.m. It's in aid of the Lorna Byrne Children's Foundation, supported by a partnership with Africa. Where's the best place for people to inquire about tickets, Lorna?
Well, I know you can buy tickets at the door, and if
Perfect.
You just look up lornabyrne.com as well, and we have Waterstones Bookshop is supporting us as well. I think it's in Foylside.
Foylside, yeah. No, that's
yes,
perfect.
Shopping okay. centre. So it's lovely to have a bookshop support us as well. And there's so many children out there in the world. You just have to watch the news. Yeah. A child saying, what did I do wrong? I did nothing wrong.
Just very finally, a listener was visiting a graveyard after having a second miscarriage. On the path in front of her were two white feathers lying. It brought me such solace. Does Lorna think that was from the souls of the babies? Well, if she felt that, then that's exactly what it was.
Yes, yes, that is exactly what it was. I hope she picked them up and put them in her pocket at least, or held them in her hand.
Take care of yourself, Lorna. Thanks for your time.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
And a pleasure talking with you. God
you
bless.
You too, Lorna. Bye-bye. That's Lorna Byrne. Some of you may or may not agree with what Lorna has to say. I'm here just to ask questions, not to judge. And lots of people will get comfort from that as well. All right. See you tomorrow at 9.